This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your first stop for festival style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into the store, just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, Andre, what truck should I buy?
I don't know, Roman. What do you want to do?
I want to buy a truck, and I'm completely confused and flabbergasted as to which one to get.
Wait a minute. You're not Nathan.
No, I'm not. And I'm also flabbergasted about that. But Nathan is on a program, so you're stuck with me. And today, we're going to do something fun. We're going to answer your questions, mostly about truck buying, because, well, let's face it, buying a truck is not like buying a car. It's very technical.
Yeah, we asked for your questions and comments, and you responded in a huge way, so thank you very much. As always, patreon.com/TFLcar is where you can support us and submit your questions as well. And we have many really important questions.
Yeah, and I think there are questions that a lot of you might be also wondering about because, you know, unlike a car, buying a truck is more of finding the right tool for the right job.
Yes.
So before we get to that, can I do a little bit of a Roman rant?
Yeah, I love those.
All right. Well, thank you. Somebody does.
Okay.
Hey, you know what an ick moment is?
Ick sounds bad.
Yeah. So let's say you're on a date with a young lady. Usually it's a lady. And you guys have some chemistry.
Okay.
And some attraction. And then you do something, usually it's a guy, that completely turns the girl off. Like, for instance, let's say you're, I don't know, eating mashed potatoes and you decide to eat them with your knife instead
or
of
your hand.
Or your hand.
Okay.
Or your mouth instead of, you know, the usual utensil. And that moment, and that's an ick moment because all of a sudden the girl's like, I don't want to date a guy, you know, who will eat mashed potatoes with a knife.
Okay. I get it.
So I was watching this TikTok and there was a list of like different ick moments. This guy went around and asked girls what their tick moment, you know, what their tick icks were.
Okay.
On TikTok. It's a lot of icks and talks. Anyway, so one of them, and this was quite kind of head scratching. The girl said that, you know, the second a guy uses a turn signal, that turns her off.
What?
Yes, I know. Using the turn signal. And I'm thinking to myself, all right. All right, how about this? How about the second you get T-boned by a truck because he doesn't know you're about to make a turn? Is that an ick moment?
That's a very big ick moment.
I guess it's not very manly to be indicating where you're driving. I suppose she thinks you should stick your arm out the window and indicate with your middle finger or something. But come on, really? Using the turn signal turns you off?
Where does that come from?
I'm gonna say that it comes from the College of Stupidity.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And I mean, we're living in strange times. But like I say, you'll be really turned off the second you're T-boned by a semi. That'll be very unsexy.
As soon as you make a very logical, good decision, that's bad, right?
I know. I'm the guy who's a Cro-Magnon who'll just drag me to the bedroom without using his turn signal.
Wow.
All right. So we asked you guys, right? to submit your questions. And boy, do we get a lot of questions.
Yeah, thank you very much. So this show is really about you guys, because without you, we wouldn't have a podcast or a YouTube channel or anything like that.
And Andre, I notice you're sporting our new all TFL shirt.
I have apparel.
Okay, you have apparel. We got all TFL shirts because we want to make sure that you guys are up to date on. Oh, and some staff in the back. Look at that. Well, you are staff.
Well, because when I have a T-shirt with a staff on the back, I feel part of the team.
Yeah, you know,
I'm part of the staff.
You're a very important part of the team. But we want you guys to keep, you know, up to date on everything we do, because obviously we have a lot of outlets. And so if you go to alltfl.com, maybe save it as a little web app to your phone, you'll get the latest and greatest in everything from classics to, you know, to motorcycles. And the trucks.
Cars and electric vehicles.
As well.
Yeah, everything.
All right, so let's get to these questions.
So I have a really cool one from Frank Beans 7199.
Okay. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Frank. He says, I'm planning on upgrading my current 2017 Toyota Tacoma to a full-size truck. Now that I have two young kids and a double-cab Tacoma just doesn't have enough space. I'm really leaning towards getting a hybrid Tundra, mainly given the reliability and expertise of Toyota with hybrids. What are your honest takes on a hybrid Tundra? And do you think I should go either with a Tundra hybrid or an F-150 hybrid?
Now, as you recall, Andre, we were one of the first in the country to actually have a Tundra.
Also an F-150 hybrid.
Yeah. You've the company's owned the Tundra and you've owned the hybrid.
Yes.
So that's a great question for you. So I guess it depends on, if we take the brands, right, and just talk about the two trucks, right? That's hard to do.
Well, Frank is already a Toyota fan.
Yes, of course.
He owns a Toyota right now.
Yes.
So,
but let's get rid of the word Toyota and the word Ford, and let's just talk about the two trucks and the differences between them, because we've had experiences with both. And then, Frank, you can decide. You know, you could add the word Toyota back or Ford back, and then you can decide which one's right for you.
Sure, absolutely. So, first of all, traditionally, the word hybrid in gasoline terms with electricity means efficiency.
It means it's right? boring.
It used to mean that until the hybrid trucks came along, Roman.
Yes, okay.
So it means efficiency traditionally. So which is why, so the F-150 hybrid was like the first installment of what I would say a full hybrid, because you could go short distances on electricity alone or have combined power. Gasoline and electricity together.
Yeah, and let's just face it. Basically, what you're doing is you're adding a battery to the truck.
Yes.
And it's, you know, depending on the size, you can only go so far. But the idea is to make the motor, actually it doesn't have a motor, the engine, sorry.
It has both.
Yeah, so
it has an engine and a motor.
And a motor. Is to make the vehicle much more effective in terms of torque, in terms of fuel efficiency, and in terms of being boring.
Not boring, Roman. You know why? Because it's also you're adding torque and power, which makes the truck faster.
Okay.
So that's not really boring. So, all right. So let's do positives and negatives.
Okay. Well, should we start with the Tundra first?
Yeah, let's talk about Tundra.
All right. So let's start with the positives and the negatives. So let's start with the positives. What are the positives?
Huge power. Yeah. So 437 horsepower and about 580 pound-feet of torque out of this combined system. That's huge power.
That is huge power.
Also 10-speed automatic.
Yep.
And so Toyota Tundra had the benefit of being second, right? So the F-150 hybrid was there on sale first. The Tundra hybrid came a little bit later. And I think partially because of that and partially also because of Toyota and their diligence to detail, I think, in my opinion, the Tundra hybrid is a little bit more smooth. Mm. You know, the operation of that system is not jerky.
A little bit more integrated.
Yeah, it's smoothly integrated. It's traditional kind of Toyota expertise comes through.
Well, let's face it. I mean, Toyota invented the hybrid drive. So if anybody can, perfect it in a pickup truck, it certainly is Toyota.
But you know what the negative is?
What?
On the Tundra.
What's that?
Efficiency.
Yeah, it's not efficient.
It's not efficient. So, Frank, if you're looking for the Tundra hybrid to provide you Prius-like efficiency...
Yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree.
You will not get it. In fact...
You want a Maverick.
Yes. In fact, many non-hybrid pickup trucks in the full-size segment get better efficiency without a hybrid than the Tundra hybrid.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it, that it's actually, like you said, more about torque and horsepower and less about fuel economy, which is ironic because in most of the other hybrid systems...
it's reversed.
Yeah, it's reversed, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the other downside, if I recall right, is don't you lose that underside storage in the back seat because that's where the battery's at?
Yeah, so the Tundra went with nickel metal hydride battery, and it's fairly large,
yep.
And they put it right underneath the rear seat.
Mm-hmm.
So when you open up the rear seat on the Tundra, you just see a plastic box.
Yep.
And this is where I love storing things.
You know, I do too, yeah.
It's, tie downs, gloves, hitches.
Small cats.
No, please don't store cats.
Okay, small dogs.
No.
Blaze
no, but it's
Blaze wouldn't fit.
But it's a great storage place out of sight.
Look, pickups, especially if you have an open bed, have no storage except for the glove box and the armrest area. But that's not enough.
Yeah.
And so that under backseat storage is very useful.
So now on the flip side, the F-150 hybrid hides the battery lithium ion underneath the truck. So close to where the fuel tank is, right? So within the frame. And so you still have all that storage. So they did not intrude into the cabin of the truck at all.
All right, Andre. So we've talked about the T product. How about the F product?
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about more about the F-150.
Yep.
So power is still okay. So just a little bit less than the Tundra, though. So 430 horsepower in the Ford. And also like 570 pound-feet of torque. So the Tundra is on top a little bit as far as power and torque, but Ford is also there. What I really liked about Ford, and they're kind of changing the way the F-150 configurator is, especially 2023 and beyond, you could get the hybrid even with the work truck. You know what I'm saying? You could get the hybrid with any trim, basically, and it had to be a crew cab. But other than that, you could get it in very different configurations. And you have the extra storage. And, Roman, most importantly, 7.2 kilowatt output.
Of onboard power.
Of onboard power.
Yeah.
And that's why I have the image behind us
where
we use the F-150 hybrid to power a house.
Yeah, that's huge. You know, if you're camping and you need, power, if you're working and you need power either at the work site or to charge up stuff, it's just a huge benefit in terms of all kinds of different aspects of your life. And I always felt that it was one of those like, duh, why didn't somebody do it when Ford actually came out and did it right away? I was always really curious that it took somebody that long to come up with that idea. We actually used it to even charge up an electric car that we were towing back because we ran out of power.
Yeah, so the possibilities are really endless. David and I used the onboard power in the F-150 to weld at the ranch.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, it's insane the number of things you can do.
But having said that, you probably only use it for like, when you use it, but you don't use it all the time. You know what I mean? When you need it, it's really great to have, but it's not like something like you need like every day unless you're really... at the job site and charging up tools or something.
Well, I think you asked me, because I owned the Ford almost for a year and a half or 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think you came into my office and you said, Andre, in the last couple of months, how often did you use onboard power? And I said, like once.
Yeah, exactly.
I was mowing my lawn. You know, I had some tools that I was charging, and I was mowing lawns, and I was using it for that.
How about fuel economy? How is the Ford?
So the Ford is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is why I'm leaning Ford.
Okay.
For Frank. So, Frank, I know you're a Tacoma guy right now, but the F-150 hybrid, in my experience, had better, just better in-town efficiency. And on the highway, they're all the same because you're pushing a giant brick through the wind, right? But in the city, the Ford, the F-150 hybrid was a little bit more efficient. It was really fast, quick. It has onboard power. Those are really great attributes.
All right, so let's bring the brands back into it, and that's why I'm going to say get the Tundra, because it sounds like, Frank, you are a Tacoma guy right now. In other words, a Toyota guy, and you mentioned the word reliability in there.
He did.
And so I'm not saying that the Tundra is going to be more reliable than the F-150. We found that Ford builds an excellent truck in terms of reliability, but I think once you're kind of... in that world of Toyota, That's like one of the things that gives you comfort.
It's a cornerstone.
Yeah, it's a corner.
It's important.
Yeah, it's like the thing that you look at the truck when you get up in the morning and you jump into it and you think to yourself, I'm going to be able to hand this down to my kids. And that's whether you will or won't, I don't know. But the fact that you think it can do that, which rightfully you might be able to do, is enough to make you very happy. So I'm going to go with the Tundra. Go a little bit bigger, get the Tundra, and just don't get it stuck because it doesn't have recovery points.
But I would also say...
in the front.
Exactly. But try to get a little bit more affordable Tundra, too. Because I know, like, the Capstone Hybrid is there. And
none of them are affordable.
I know.
None of
it's getting harder and harder.
When I say
harder.
None, I don't mean just Toyotas. I mean any full-size pickup.
Exactly. But Frank, try to go into configurator, figure out where the hybrid is, powertrain-wise, on trim levels, and just, try to go there.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it, Frank. What's next, Andre?
So, speaking of price, I think we had a question about prices. This one comes from Genera Ineves. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that.
All right.
So the prices on new trucks, they say, continue to increase year after year. So this is a kind of a big question. But...
007, Genera
Ineves. The 007.
I'm just going to call you 007.
007, thank you. Secret agent.
Yes.
Do you think traditional manufacturers will actually start to lower their prices on new trucks for a change instead of continuing to increase their price? We've seen this happening with some Tesla EVs recently, but not trucks. It's a good question.
Yeah, I think that's a question on a lot of people's minds. So thank you, 007. And the reason for that is, people are thinking to themselves, should I buy something now? Or if I can, should I hold off and hope that things return to normal? And so let's kind of dissect that question, 007. The first part of it we'll answer in a second, but the second part where you said, like Tesla, but Tesla is kind of its own thing, right? I kind of feel like, it depends on like what side of the bed Mr. Musk has gotten up on, depending on where the price of the vehicle will be that day. And to me, he has a different motivation than I think most legacy companies. So I think his motivation is to get the highest stock price, basically to sell as many vehicles as possible. So at the end of every quarter, you'll see, incredible price drops. But I'll give you an example of the downside of that. My neighbor just bought a Model S maybe a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And they just dropped the price by like $30,000.
Yeah, and so, now your neighbor, is he happy?
No, like overnight, and he trades in cars a lot. Uh-huh. And overnight, the value of his car went down like $30,000 like that.
He lost money.
Yeah, yeah, and thank you, Tesla.
But Tesla is also.
I think that's a whole kind of. Yeah. I don't think that bodes anything for the rest of the industry.
Yeah, because they're also operating in a unique position because they're an all electric company.
Yes.
And they have direct sales in a lot of states.
Yes.
Right.
In most states.
Legacy manufacturers don't have direct sales.
Yeah.
At all.
So you've got this dealer in the middle.
Yeah.
And then. Of course, dealers are dealers, and it depends on, where you're at and where they're at, and do they have a boat payment coming up?
Or a plane payment.
So let's get to the first part of your... Yeah, plane payment. Let's get to the first part of your question. Do we think truck prices will come down? I think they will come down. I'm starting to see the lots fill up with pickup trucks, and the old model was, obviously, they had a lot of trucks on the lot, and then you'd come in, and then you could potentially... play one dealer off of another, or you could, do some internet sleuthing and find out what the MSRP is, and then you could try to kind of negotiate down. That's a hard game to play because there's a lot of other factors at play, right? You don't know how much money is on the hood from the manufacturer sometimes. You don't know what incentives they have. But I think the prices currently are just unsustainable.
Yeah, so, and I think a lot of it also has to do with the pricing of the trucks and vehicles in general. It has to do with supply and demand.
Yes.
To a big extent. So I was recently talking to one friend who works at the dealership, and he was telling me that some of the good news is there are more used inventory now. So people are, starting to, once again, buy new vehicles. There is a little bit more used inventory.
Which brings the price of new vehicles down.
Yeah, a little bit, because you have more choice available. When you walk into the dealership lot, you can pick a truck that's about 2 or 3 years old versus a new one. But on the flip side, like vehicles like the Super Duty that just was refreshed, you can't find one.
Right.
Every Super Duty that arrives on the lot is pre-sold. So that drives the price up, right? Because there is a lot of interest in that truck and the prices go through the roof.
You bring up a really good point, Andre. I would say that, it depends what you want. If you want the latest and greatest, or you want the top dog trims, so if you want a TRX or a Raptor R,
forget about it.
Or a Hummer EV, just forget about it. Those things are, for most of us are unobtainium, and if you're in that kind of category where you've got money to burn, they're still hard to get, right? Because there's just so little supply and so much demand. But if you're willing to look at trucks that maybe aren't the soup du jour, you know what I mean? The truck of the day where everybody mm-hmm. wants them. So I'm talking about trucks like Ram. The Ram has not been refreshed for a long time. Especially now with the Titan going out of production, I'm sure you can get a really good deal on a Titan. I think the same can be said for Frontiers if you're in the midsize truck space. But if you have to have the latest and greatest, just be prepared to, pay through the nose.
Like the next-gen Tacoma.
Yeah, that's another one that's going to be
super. Or the Ranger Raptor, right?
Right.
I mean, forget about it. I mean, those prices are going to be huge.
I think the Colorado's coming down now, the new Colorado.
Well, there's more of them, and now the 2024 model year is on the way.
Yep.
So Colorado and Canyons may be a little bit more attainable as more of them reach the dealership. But you mentioned the Ford Maverick, right? So the one way to, if you don't need a big truck, one way to save money is go smaller, right? From the full size to the midsize, from the midsize to the compact segment, you can just kind of move downward to save money.
From the compact to the Tonka?
Tonka toy.
That saves you a lot of money. Not a lot of utility. But
you could sit on top of it.
Yes, of course.
So that's another way to save a little bit of money. But we did a show about this, Roman. Remember where, government regulations on emissions and safety, and there's a lot of other forces that driving a price up, right?
Yeah. I also think social media is driving the price up because there's so many people now who want to be influencers of one form or another. We see it all the time. I mean, we've been doing this a long time and we consider ourselves more journalists and influencers, but there's a lot of people out there who have to have the latest and greatest because that's what's going to get views, right? And we do too. I'm not saying we don't, but for them, they make their money by promoting whatever is red hot. And so you kind of tend to feel as a consumer that if you don't have the latest and greatest Overtrail, right? Or the latest and greatest Land Cruiser, that you're not like part of the cool kids.
Exactly.
And I think that's all driven by social media. But like I said, there's nothing wrong with a lot of the trucks that aren't the cool kids on the block, and you can save money on those. And I'm talking about new trucks, it's a whole other conversation if we're talking about used trucks.
Totally.
Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced. From the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support, the new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to RadioBeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's RadioBeats.com, code DEAL.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
So I have a related question from another fan whose username I may mispronounce, but I think it's XCummyX. X, okay. So
I'll just call you X.
Mr. X or Mrs. X. Uh-huh. So a two-parter. So first part of the question, out of this four main segments, small, mid-size, full-size, and heavy-duty, which of those provides the most value? Where do you think manufacturers more directly try to compete on price? Well, I think every segment, they compete on price fiercely. Mm. So if you look at Tacoma versus Ranger, or if you look at the F-150 versus Silverado, or whatever you have, Ram versus Toyota, I think those prices for those starting prices and trims are super close. Which provides the best value? I think when you buy more metal.
Yeah, you get like more metal for your money if you buy heavy duty.
Heavy duty.
Look, the most popular segment of those, of course, is a full size.
Yeah.
Right? So that's probably the, if you had to pick the most competitive segment, Ford, Chevy, Ram, Toyota, and Nissan have been fighting tooth and nail for that. So in general, with more competition, you get lower prices. Of course, now we're in a weird time where you don't. But in terms of like where do you get the most value for your money, I think Andre is absolutely right. I can't point to like a segment and say, you know, you're going to get a lot more truck if you buy a compact truck than if you're going to buy a full size or a heavy duty. It doesn't work that way.
Well, so when you own a pickup truck, you become, all of a sudden you gain more friends, right? Somebody's moving, they want your help. Somebody's in trouble, somebody's stuck, they want your help. So the bigger the truck, in my opinion, the more things you could do. You know, you could move heavier objects, you could help more people, whatever you want to do.
You can spend more time driving around trying to find a parking space.
Yes, all of those things. So maybe, let's just say,
I'm being funny, but let me be serious about this. I would say, first of all, take the heavy duty truck segment out of it. Because if you're looking for a truck that you're using as a family truckster, and we don't know by that question, the heavy duty is the most closely resembled to a tool, right? People buy heavy duty trucks not because they want to, well, not everybody, but most people buy them because they want to haul a fifth wheel, or they need to use the payload, the vast payload capacity. It's not a great truck as an everyday driver. We've got the Trail Boss here, the Cummins Trail Boss, and just from a practical standpoint, it's hard to fill up if you're in town because not all pumps have diesel. Mm-hmm. You got to keep filling it up with DEF fluid, which is also, I know they're really popular right now because everybody's like, oh, I want the biggest, brawniest truck, but they're really tools. They're work tools. They're the truckiest of the trucks. So I would say take that out of the equation, because now you're competing with people who are using them for work as opposed to for everything else.
Yeah, but Roman, look at some of the more popular trims recently, like the Ram Heavy Duty Rebel, mm-hmm. Meant for lifestyle. Tremor as Super Duty, once again, lifestyle. So there is some of that there, but I would agree with you. If you wanted to commute every day, one of the worst things you could do is buy a dually. Right? I mean, or a large heavy-duty truck.
Or even a single rear wheel.
Yeah. I mean, they're long wheelbase. They're hard to turn, and everything else
hard
you mentioned.
Hard to get in and out of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would take that out of it. And I would say for most people, kind of the sweet spot for trucks is mid-sized. And the reason for that is once upon a time, mid-sized trucks were pretty small. But now they have gotten to be kind of like maybe a F-150 from three generations ago. How are you, let me ask you this, how are you living with your mid-sized truck? Is it working for your family, Andre?
Just barely.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I recently did a long-term update video.
AllTFL.com on your Colorado?
It's on AllTFL.com, yeah. You're
from a tall family.
Yeah. So I'm basically almost 6'3". My wife is pretty tall. She's almost 6 foot. Our two kids are also pretty tall.
Yes.
So all of us, I really bought the Colorado because I wanted to try out the new generation of the truck, right? And I was really keen on that. But after going to the lake a few times, yeah, the space is a little bit tight. Mm-hmm. and my son wants to bring his buddy. Right now there's five of us.
Yeah, back seat's not gonna
happen. And so thank goodness, you know, my son is 12, so he's kind of flexible, right?
So your next truck, you think you're going to go back to a full size?
I think so.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, so that's my answer.
But you're, like I say, you're tall.
Yeah, right. We're kind of big people here. Yeah. So.
All right, what was the second part of the question from X?
Yes, off-roading is becoming more of a mainstream interest. Yes, absolutely.
Depends where you live, I guess.
Yeah, New York City, maybe not so much. And a lot of specialty trims, the ZR2s, the Raptors, the TRD Pros, are starting to be out of reach for most average consumers. True. Mm. Where do you think is a sweet spot for getting 90% of the capability and fun for the least amount of cash, similar to what Mazda Miata is maybe for sports cars?
A 7 to 10-year-old truck that has an off-road package.
There you go. Done.
Because yeah, if you want to take a brand new, we just had the AT4X here. We had the Raptor R. I was terrified to take that thing off-road, Andre, and we took it off-road because now you've got a $112,000 truck that you're putting in harm's way, right? And there's that, you know, Land Rover has that saying, you know, the first person to take their vehicle off-road is the third owner 7 years into the vehicle's life. And I think that is a sweet spot because, yeah, if you really want to go off-roading, I mean, there was just that video, for instance, from Burning Man where that guy with the TRX, did you see that?
Like, yeah, he was like pedal to the metal.
Pulling his trailer with its little steps down.
Yeah.
But once in a lifetime.
Right? He won.
Congratulations. You got to use the TRX's prodigious off-road ability. But, you know, why would you want to, I mean, because it's cool. I know. You want a truck that, this is the thing about human nature, right? You want to buy a truck for the 1% of the time you're going to use it as opposed to the 99% of the time you're going to use it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think an FX4 on the forward side, right, it's not as cool, but it's more off-roady than you'll ever need. I mean, trucks, just standard 4x4 trucks are about as off-roady as most people, unless they're doing, you know, like Poison Spider and Moab, are ever going to need for the majority of their off-roading.
And I think you're starting to see that with all the major manufacturers because they're creating more niches, right? You mentioned FX4. That's been around for decades. Now they have the Tremor. They also introduced the Rattler. Remember the F-150 Rattler that is a unicorn? You could never find one. I'm not sure where they are.
And you know, I think they're done with the off-roady stuff because Ford just said they're bringing out the Lobo, right? Which is, you know, the Mexican F-150, but I think in this case it's going to be a lowered F-150. So now they're going back to like, all right, we've cut that pie into as many segments as we can.
The off-road pie.
Yeah. So now we're going to go the opposite way.
So, and they've created more. But I would say the Trail Bus. I bought the Colorado Trail Bus for a reason. Because it has a small lift from the factory, has beefy tires, and it doesn't have all the lockers, and it doesn't have fancy shocks, and it doesn't have a lot of things, even cruise control.
But
it's still capable, right? It has that ground clearance, and it has the G80 mechanical locker.
And X, there's one thing you got to keep in mind. As much as off-road trucks are expensive, if you wanted to get that same level of not just capability, but durability from the aftermarket, you'd pay a boat ton more money. You would, right? That's the thing. Like, let's take the Gladiator, for instance. If you had to buy a Dana 44
front, with a locker?
With a locker, front and rear, that would cost you a heck
of thousands of dollars.
More than Rubicon Gladiator would. Yeah. So you're kind of in a catch-22. If you don't buy it initially and then you want to add it on later, you're going to just pay through the nose. And the other thing we found out is, and I'm not going to name names here. Should I name names, Andre? I'm not going to name names. I don't think that's a good idea. But in general, you know, we've bought a lot of trucks where people have added stuff onto them. And we just actually bought an 80 Series Land Cruiser with the same issue. It has some aftermarket rock rails. And you've seen those things.
They're almost rotten to the core.
They're rusted.
They're rusted.
Yeah. And then we bought that Jeep AEV. Uh-huh. And all that stuff is just incredible.
The JK. So you can go to the wrong shop, basically.
Yeah, and just aftermarket stuff isn't built to the same tolerances and the same level of durability and longevity that the OEM stuff is. It just isn't.
Often is not. No. Yeah, exactly.
And we won't name names.
Yes.
I know you want us to name names, but we won't.
And to add to your point, like if I wanted to turn my Trail Boss into ZR2,
yeah.
Forget about it.
Yeah,
you can't. you know, for example, the shock mounting in the rear axle is different. I would have to redo my frame just to become a ZR2. Yeah. So that's not.
So I guess, X, I think what we're telling you is if you really are going to go off-road, then heck yeah, it's worth the money. But if you're doing it just because, you know, you want to ride around in a TRX or a Raptor R to show off, if you got the money, go for it. But yeah, you don't need that capability.
Yeah, look at the Rebels and the Pro 4Xs, TRD off-roads.
Yeah, in fact, that much expense is just going to make off-roading really sucky because you'll just be so worried about the thing.
I have another question from Greyhawk.
Okay, Greyhawk.
Greyhawk JL947.
All right, what's Greyhawk asking?
JL, does that mean they like Jeeps?
Could be.
I'm not sure. So Greyhawk has almost a multi-part question because, we alluded to this already, TFL buys a lot of trucks over the years. True. Which one was your favorite in each of these categories? Off-roading, towing, or everyday driving? On the other side, has there been any that were just disappointing in any of those areas? Oh, it's Brian from Scottsdale.
Oh, there you go. Hey, Brian.
Oh, hey, Brian.
Well, what a great question, Brian. Thanks for asking. Yeah, I mean, as reviewers, you know, we tend to try to be political because...
And fair,
but oftentimes political because we also have to have a working relationship with the manufacturers, and we don't want to piss them off too much by, you know, taking a huge, you know... I guess if you're, you know, a YouTuber and you don't have a relationship with the manufacturers, then you can not be political, or you can go the opposite way and be extremely derogatory or negative because it'll get you views. But we're always fair at the end of the day, right? So we're always fair. But having said...
Well, usually there's a good and the bad.
There's a good and bad, yeah.
To everything, yeah.
So, you know, political / fair, in a way they're different, but in a way they're not. So let's talk about the trucks that we've owned that have surprised us. Let's start with that. So I'll give you mine, all right?
Okay.
So you may think it's like a TRX or the Raptor R. Those were exactly what I thought they were. Just big-chested, barrel-chested, you know, loud, in your face, puts a huge smile on you every time you drive them. So
kind of predictable.
Yeah, what you think they are, which is great. But the one that really surprised me out of all the ones we've owned was the Chevy Trail Boss. Remember that one?
It was the Silverado.
The Silverado, yeah. Boss. That actually, except for the seats, which were kind of sucky. I don't know. GM's got a thing with seats. They're never long enough for me.
Yes.
And they're never soft enough for me. Maybe I'm getting old and too comfortable. But that truck just did pretty much everything that it was beyond honest. It did everything that I needed it to do, and it did it very well. So you wanted to cross country in it. Okay, maybe not the seats, but even those I got used to, it was good. You want to tow with it, it was good. You wanted to go off-road with it, even with those ranchos, I thought it was good. So for me, that was the one I think that was the most surprising because it just was such a Swiss Army knife of trucks.
I agree. I have another one in mind.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to bring up a picture of our Trail Boss and I failed miserably.
So there you go. There you go, Brian.
I loved our Gladiator.
Oh, yeah.
The Gobi.
Yeah.
It kind of had this desert color, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, out of the box for off-roading, the Gladiator Rubicon is already pretty good. And then we had a Jeep Performance Part lift kit on it, N35s. And that was one of the most favorite off-roading pickup trucks that I think we had because it's a little bit smaller, right? The Gladiator is a little bit more compact. It's midsize. And has a great suspension that Jeep worked with Fox on, right? Exactly for that vehicle. And it was one of our best, I think, off-road projects we've done.
Yeah, I agree. It was the stance was right, the look was right, you know, everything about it was right. The engine was right size for that vehicle. I love the color. It all worked. All right, I'm going to go the other way now.
Are you going towing or where are you going?
I'm going surprisingly in a bad way.
Oh, okay.
So with one hand I take GM and with one hand I give GM, with the other hand I take, because the one truck that I did not jive with was the Chevy Silverado ZR2.
Ooh.
Yes, I know.
Wow.
And you know why? Because I was expecting it. That was one of those, like, I think one of the biggest sins you could make as either a truck or a car manufacturer. And there are a number of vehicles that I could point to that have done this, where like the vehicle visually writes a check that you can't cash. A good example of that would be the BMW i8, right? That looks like a supercar.
It looks like a spaceship.
It looks like a very fast Autobahn burner. And then you get in the thing and you basically have a little mini three-cylinder, you know, that's supplemented by a battery. So it looks much quicker than it is. The problem with the ZR2 was that it still had that V8 under the hood, which would be a good thing, except it was meant to compete in some ways with the TRX and the Raptor R.
Well, it is and was their top dog.
Yeah.
And Silverado.
And you can't compare 400-ish horsepower to 700. So while it works in, you know, their other trucks, it doesn't work in their top dog truck. And I was like, Chevy, you've got a Corvette, right? Take that engine, please. Put it in there, and now you've got, you know, but I think Chevy felt that they had the Hummer EV, so the ZR2, you know, it was going to stay with that with that 6.2 V8. But I just felt like it was way underpowered for the kind of the looks it had.
Yeah, and Chevy had other tools in their tool bag for the ZR2 that they did not use. For example, they also sell performance intakes and exhaust systems on their accessory side. Mm. Why not just wrap it into one package?
Good point.
Just pack it in, have every ZR2 have that exhaust system and make it a little bit more in your face, more loud.
Yeah, stick the vet engine in there.
Yeah, or raise the power. The Cadillac Escalade V has a supercharger.
Yeah, slap a supercharger on it.
Why not use that?
Or that engine.
Yes.
I never got that. The potential was there, but the reality wasn't. How about you? What was the one you kind of found surprisingly disappointing? Is there one that you could point to?
The Hyundai Santa Cruz?
Yeah, the Hyundai Santa Cruz was...
So here's the thing.
Dual clutch.
Yeah, dual clutch transmissions, and I think pickup trucks don't really mix.
Yeah. I mean, they make one with the regular 8-speed, which I think Nathan has, and that one is perfectly fine. But the dual clutch, we took it off-road a bunch, and it just would overheat.
And also, we had a little bit of reliability problems with ours, and it was kind of clunky, and it was fixed. Hyundai did fix it over a couple of iterations of us going to the dealership. So, but I mean, the Santa Cruz is good because it's, once again, it's a runabout, right? It's comfortable in the city. It's small. It has a pretty nice interior.
You know what I hated about that? There's a lot of things I loved about it. So I love the design language that they used. I love the size. It was very easy to park. I love the fact that it was a little bit taller than most vehicles. But I'm just so OCD. I hated all that piano black. All I did was the first thing I would do is I would just wipe down all that dust that was all over the screen and the piano black. I could not get past that. It just drove me.
And then the
bonkers.
Dust comes back immediately.
I mean, if you take it off road, it's like, the screen's like a porcupine covered with dust.
So, yeah. Do you want to go to towing really quick?
Because
we do a lot of trailering and towing.
Let's do a Ford.
So, one of the best trucks, and we've owned a couple. Heavy duties.
Yep.
And actually, we have an OBS Ford now, too.
We do.
We have an older
truck. Old body style.
Yep. But my favorite right now, out of several we have owned, I would say our Cummins Ram is my top choice for the trucks we've owned for towing.
Yeah, you know, we've put a lot of money. Usually we don't, because a lot of times the vehicles just sit here when we're not using them for video production, right? So we don't put a lot of miles on them. Plus we have the test vehicles that we also have, so it's hard to put serious miles on them. But that one, we bought it in, March of 2021. Is that
so
right?
It's been like a year and a half.
And we've got like over 20,000 miles on it.
22,000.
Yeah, that just shows you how much we use it. Because it's such a great towing rig.
It's kind of a go-to. You know, when we need to go to Utah to grab a trailer, we use the Cummins.
Yeah, and it's got tons of room. It just purrs down the highway. It doesn't care. You could load it up. Whether you put 6,000 or 12,000 behind it, it just doesn't care.
And also with a lift, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we actually lifted the truck. We made it the Trailhound. Used the BDS suspension, and once again, Fox.
And then our friends at AEV gave us that really badass front bumper, which is just spectacular.
And we're going to do a rear bumper.
I hope so, to finish it off.
But and still, that did not destroy the towing.
Yeah, yeah.
It still tows really, really, really well.
It looks like a Prospector. The only thing it's missing is that snorkel, which I don't want. Here's a hint for you guys. Snorkels are cool, but they're loud, right?
Because they have the wind resist.
No, it's the wind flow around them that tends to make a whistle. Yeah, yeah.
Because they're kind of sticking up there.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you're going to do a snorkel, there's always this, like, do I put on the driver's side or passenger side? Yeah, go passenger if you can.
Make it aerodynamic, like some new manufacturers are doing.
Otherwise, they're very loud.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
So, yeah, so those are kind of our, I mean, we've owned like 24 trucks probably over the years. So, and, you know, a lot of them, of course, were really, really good.
All right, let's keep going. What else right there?
So here we go.
I'll do another rant while you're looking at questions. Mm-hmm. So, Andre, I was driving to work this morning, and there's like a highway, right, the diagonal that runs through Boulder, and off of J Road, when you're going south, you can make a turn, and because it's a three-lane highway where people are doing 55 more than that, there's a merge lane there, right? And the idea is that you pull up and you do a zipper merge, right? So that you get up to speed, and so you have your own lane there. Mm-hmm. And I'm pulling up and trying to make that turn, and I look, and about maybe a quarter mile, there was a Mercedes GL, it was a GLS that was parked in the merge lane because that driver didn't know how to do a zipper merge.
So they accelerated a little bit and then they stopped.
Yes. I couldn't think of anything more dangerous.
No, because other people are trying to accelerate right there.
I'm like, have we stopped? Like teaching zipper merges, and it happens so much. It happens so often when you're kind of and it happened to me twice today, actually, happened to me in Longmont, too, when you're trying to merge, and there's a merge lane, and people stop, even though there's no stop sign there, because they don't understand or they don't either have the ability or the, I don't know, Nathan probably would say cojones, to actually accelerate and then merge like a zipper into that traffic. It's very frustrating. Mm-hmm. Like they think it's like a stop, where you have to stop and wait for the light to turn red so that you can then get it. You know, I was in a rush. I was trying to get to work. And I'm like, no, just go. There's no stop. There's nothing but a yield sign.
Now they lost momentum. It's done.
And then you can't get. Then you can't
it's
do
done.
It. Yeah. Like that Mercedes just stuck there. That is super dangerous.
Yeah. I've seen that too.
Yeah.
So here's a couple of questions. Maybe we can hit some of them quickly.
Okay.
One is from Chuck Cannon.
Hey, Chuck.
So Chuck grew up in the city, he says, and never had an opportunity to tow anything. Mm. What is a good way to practice, he says. Any suggestions on where to start or the first thing to tow? Well, first of all, you have to have a vehicle.
Yeah, this sounds like a question for you.
You have to have a vehicle, Chuck. So it depends on how heavy. I mean, first of all, if you've never towed a trailer, gosh, you could rent a U-Haul. I mean, and actually practice with that in an empty space so you're not pressured by others.
So I listened to Paul and Todd over at Every Day Driver, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And those guys do a really good kind of question segment. And the reason they do a really good segment answering questions is because people, they've like basically defined the kind of criteria they need to make a good answer from the question, right? And this is a perfect example of we don't have enough information to know how to answer that because we don't know, you know, what you're planning on towing. There's a big difference between towing like a little motorcycle trailer to towing a boat to towing a big, like, let's say, you know, car trailer or toy hauler or so it's hard to answer that because I don't know what you're planning to tow and we don't know what you're planning to tow, what the vehicle is that you're going to use to tow, right?
Yeah. So we need more info.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to be using a Maverick, in which case it's relatively straightforward, or are you going to be jumping in the deep end and going to, I don't know, like a toy hauler, or how about a horse trailer with living quarters? Like one of those monsters.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I don't know. Dude.
Do you have horses? No. So here's a – but I can –
give it your best shot.
Yeah. Share. I can say this. So people think it's all about power. Mm. That's what – if you haven't told before, I think I've talked to a few people. They always say, how much power do you have? How much horsepower? How much torque? It's actually about how many brakes do you have.
Yeah. It's more about controlling the load.
It's more about stopping than moving in a lot of respects. Because a lot of vehicles now have great engines, you know, especially newer vehicles have turbochargers, any number of things. So there's several links in that chain, right? You have to have the right hitch, you know, that's capable of towing the weight you're towing. You have to be adjusted correctly so the truck and trailer are as level as possible. You know, how many times have you seen a truck squatted down completely and then the trailer makes a V with it, and they're trying to go down the highway.
You have to figure out what tongue weight is. That's a good way to start. So I'll take a crack at this, too.
Okay.
I would say, what was his name again?
Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. So I would say, Chuck, get yourself a towing rig, whatever that is, whether it's a truck or, you know, get yourself a, maybe go to U-Haul if you don't have one, borrow a trailer, and then find one of those empty parking lots where, like, a shopping mall used to be, right?
With lines.
Yeah, with lines, yeah. And I would start by, first of all, just driving around and getting used to the fact that when you make a turn, you got to always look in the mirror from the direction you're turning, and you got to kind of not do a turn the way you do with a car, right? But you got to make a much shallower. It's a wider, much wider.
You turn later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So that you're not cutting the corner with a trailer. So get comfortable with that. Then get comfortable in backing up a trailer and see if you can actually put it between the lines, because nothing more stressful than like bringing a boat down to the dock
for the first time.
The first time, and you're zigzagging down.
Yeah,
and everybody's watching you. So practice that. I would also say practice hitching and unhitching the trailer, and make sure that, because there's a bunch of steps, and they probably got to be done in the right order. So make sure you're comfortable with actually locking down the hitch. Make sure you cross your chains. Make sure you put on your emergency if you've got brakes.
And also, when unhooking a trailer, chalk your wheels.
Yes, always please. Chalk your wheels.
Please, because sometimes you're not aware of a slope. There might be a slight slope anywhere you are, and if you just unhook the hitch, the trailer might just run away. It just will roll down or into your vehicle. So please chalk your wheels. Also, this is also counterintuitive. People think that if you have a really short, small trailer, it's easier to back up.
Harder.
It's actually harder. Because every motion you make, that small trailer does it quicker.
Yeah.
Right? It's just quicker to respond. So if you have a longer trailer, like a boat trailer sometimes has a really long tongue, actually that's easier.
I know that viewers and listeners out there are screaming, we know if you want to go left, you turn right. If you want to go right, you turn left. That's also counterintuitive.
And then Ford, and now most manufacturers have little knobs
on the truck
ways to help you do this.
Yes.
So
little knobs for everything, unless you've got a screen, in which case you won't have a knob.
Yeah.
So I would, like I say, just practice, because it can be very stressful, just, you know, just jumping into a truck and then hooking up a trailer and then going down the highway, because the first thing you're going to find out is you're going to have to fill up with gas, and all of a sudden you're going to be like, holy cow, I've got this giant trailer behind me, and how do I even fill up with gas without blocking the entire gas station or taking out a gas pump?
Mm-hmm.
It's easier on the highway, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, in town trailer.
Especially in older towns or older parts of towns where the streets are so narrow that forget about
it. Oh, I remember we had the worst time. Remember we had that Tatra?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I love Emmy, but we were staying with a friend of hers. Hi, Emmy. Long time no talk. And she had a place in downtown Washington, D.C., which is a regular traffic nightmare on purpose. But we didn't know, so we brought a trailer in to downtown.
With a Raptor.
The widest
of the widest trucks possible.
Yeah, we were going down this little street in Georgetown at like 1 o'clock at night with millimeters of spare between the cars. That was probably the most stressful towing of my whole life.
Here's Kurt Burkhardt, so Kurt, he's asking, how well do hybrid pickup trucks tow on longer trips? For example, I know they have huge torque numbers, but what happens when the battery gets low under load going up a hill?
Usually the way it works is the manufacturers will never allow the battery to get so low that you lose the torque and the horsepower. So you won't be able to deplete it completely.
Yeah, because the engine, whatever the engine is, right, is continuously can replenish the battery.
Yeah.
Right. And we've seen this many times. We even saw it while towing an electric car while charging. You know, I was really worried that we'll be depleting the battery while moving. But the engine just works a little bit harder, right? And the engine saves the day.
I was listening to another one of my favorite podcasts today, Seen Through Glass, two British guys who do mainly supercars. And they were doing a live show, and one of the guys asked them, how long will it be before we have hybrids that have a lot more range? So let's say you could go 100 miles on electricity, then you know you have a smaller engine, like a 1.9 or 2 liter, that then replenishes. One of the guys answered, and I completely disagree with this, but he said that the reason we don't have that yet is because the manufacturers are slowly rolling it out. Because if they rolled it out right away, then we wouldn't buy the next new generation. So they're slowly trying to get to the point. And I get that kind of conspiracy theory, but I think the point that people miss, and this is, I know this is kind of off the subject, but it also has to do with this, is the problem with that concept is the bigger the battery, which you're going to have, the more weight you're adding to the vehicle, which means the worse it'll perform and the less range you'll have. And the other problem, which I think people tend to...
Cost,
because you're dragging around two powertrains.
Uh-huh.
I mean, do you really need an electric motor and a gas engine? It doesn't seem like the most efficient way to either build a car or to drive a car. So I think the more hybrid-y something becomes, plug-in hybrid-y, in other words, the more range it has, the less efficient it actually is. And so at some point, you're just better off to go all electric and lose the gas engine, because why drag that around? Or go the other way, lose the electric motor and just have the gas engine, as opposed to trying to cram two things into one vehicle that make the vehicle just heavier and worse.
Well, just look at Toyota and the Tundra. We talked about this.
Very small battery.
Their hybrid is 1.87 kilowatt hours.
Yeah.
You know, that's enough to maybe go a mile, if that, right? So, I agree with you. And we still, to this day, do not have a plug-in hybrid pickup. We don't. I mean, we have Lightning, we have Silverado EV.
I think the dream, and people, especially with Ram, were talking about this, would be like something like a locomotive, right?
Where you have a small generator.
A serial hybrid, yeah. You have a small generator, well, a locomotive, it's a big generator. And then that basically, but the reason you don't do that is because it's not efficient. So, you know, I thought when I first started learning about hybrids, why don't you have a diesel generator? Because diesels actually are suited for that. They run at one speed. They have a lot of torque, so they can generate a lot of electricity. But it's just prohibitively, like you said, expensive and super heavy. And so I don't think that's the solution. It's kind of like that, you know, it's kind of like the perpetual, like sometimes people think that, you know, when we go up to the top of the Ike Gauntlet in an electric vehicle, then when we come down, we gain the same amount of power, right? It doesn't work that way.
No, physics are against us.
Yes.
No.
All right, we're running out of time, but let's do a couple more questions.
Okay, wow. It seems like we just started.
Yeah, I know.
It's fun.
Yeah, yeah. These are great questions, guys. Thank you for sending them
in. So here's another one from Patrick Ryer.
I think we only got through like 2% of the questions.
I'm so sorry.
Hey, Pat.
Patrick has a question about the 2024 Tacoma. Patrick, unfortunately, we haven't driven it yet.
No, but we will.
But his question specifically is about inverter capability. We talked about onboard power, and he says, can I run my 2-kilowatt inverter without the engine being on? So traditionally, like in the F-150 hybrid, you have to have the engine on if you're using onboard power, because the battery can be kind of drained quickly, and you have to replenish it, right, and continuously replenish it. But it usually just idles.
Yeah.
So if you're worried about noise and loud noises, usually the engine just idles at about 1,000 RPM or less.
It's amazing how much power you can generate with
a giant V6.
Twin turbo V6. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah, but you are burning fuel.
You are.
Yeah. You are burning fuel. Here's a question from Zach Britton. Thank you, Zach. Do you think that half-ton diesel trucks are good alternatives for their gas-powered counterparts? With GM being the only manufacturer in the half-ton diesel space, do you think other manufacturers may try to bring them back, given the apparent success of the 3-liter Duramax? I think no. I don't think any other manufacturer will bring a diesel into a half-ton space anytime soon, because GM won. They won that race.
So let's talk about that. That's a great question. So when Ford had their half-ton diesel, it was basically an ancient motor that they built in the UK that belonged to, like, when Ford had that Premier Automotive Group, right, when they still owned Range Rover and Jaguar. Rover, yep. Yeah. So I think that they kept, I think, that diesel engine plant, and they took that engine and put it. So it was already old technology by the time it got here. And, you know, it just got clobbered. It was neither super fuel efficient nor super torquey.
Yes.
And that's really the problem with, like.
And the same thing happened to the Cummins 5-liter in the Nissan.
Yeah, it was kind of, instead of being the best of both worlds, small diesels are the worst of both worlds. They're not as torquey, and they're not as fuel efficient as their gas competitors. And so I'm not convinced that, like, half-ton trucks with diesels are actually such a great thing. I think you're right. GM won that battle.
They won it. Yeah. But I wanna add to what you're saying, Ron. Uh-huh. I think the smaller diesels, because we have that, they don't cash the check that we think the diesel is writing, because we're used to heavy-duty diesels, right? Heavy-duty diesels are known for monstrous torque and also really good efficiency while towing. The half-ton diesel, like the 3-liter, can deliver a lot of that, but not to the same extent, right? So you're kind of falling short of expectations a little bit. Although, that being said, the 3-liter new Duramax that they just updated, almost what has 500 pounds of foot-pounds of torque. I mean, that's why I think they won the battle, because it's, you know, they still have good emissions and they still have good efficiency.
And speaking of emissions, Stellantis, of course, got caught.
That did not help. Eco-diesel.
The eco-diesel wasn't very eco, even though it was a diesel. And here's the other problem, Andre. Diesels are very long-lived, but everything else about them is super expensive. So, you know, you have to spend a lot more money doing oil changes. If it breaks, you have to get diesel mechanic pricing versus gas pricing, and that tends to be at least 30 to 50% more for a diesel mechanic. You also have to fill them up with DEF fluid. And the other, of course, issue is you can't fill them up everywhere. Tommy was just using the Trailhound, right, the Cummins, to move his girlfriend's couch around. Mm-hmm. And he was driving down to Colorado Springs, and he could not find from here to, because he's not on the highway, right, he could not find a pump that had diesel in your typical neighborhood area.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. And then you know, like, heavy-duty diesel owners know this, but, you know, if you got to swap out injectors, $800 an injector, V8.
It adds up.
Multiply that by 8.
Yeah.
And you will have to do it. And God help you if you blow a turbo.
So, but I'm hoping the 3-liter Duramax stays with us for at least a couple years.
Yeah, I'm not against it. I think they did a great job.
Yeah, and I think they're really... I'm not sure exactly how they won, but I think, I mean, straight six orientation is great, and they went forward.
And then the other bugaboo, which people hate to talk about, but is true, I can't stand, and we have one now, we have that OBS Ford, right? Mm-hmm. But I used to bike
a lot,
both, you know, the kind you pedal and the kind you don't. I hate being behind like a 10-year-old F-250. It just stinks to high hell. And I'm not even talking one that has been, you know, emissions deleted. I'm just talking about one that's 10 years old and has been taken care of. It's just so stinky and just such a miserable thing to drive behind. And I spent a lot of time in Europe where, you know, the small diesels became a thing because diesel fuel was less taxed in Europe than gas was. And same problem. You get behind some oil-burning Peugeot in Europe and you might as well just take a screwdriver and stick it in your ear. It's that miserable.
Mm-hmm. Should we take one more?
Yeah, one more.
I mean, we've been kind of at it for quite a while. Here's one from Mary and the Jeep Cycle. Thank you, Mary.
By the way, I love being behind old V8s.
With that sound?
No, with that, like, smell of somehow I'm weird. I like the smell of, like, old unburned gas, but I hate the smell of unburned diesel. I don't know why that is. because the diesel just looks like smog to me, whereas the gas just brings back memory. So I know that's weird and it's me, but
everybody their own, you know.
Yeah, but it's weird, yeah.
Yeah. So Mary says, I'm planning towing a small RV with my 2011 second generation Toyota Tacoma 4x4.
Hey, Mary.
And Mary wants to live in this RV full time.
Oh, good luck to you,
Mary. But I'm worried about towing up a steep hill with my Taco. Do you guys know anyone who tows heavy with their older Tacomas? I can't seem to find many YouTube videos on this subject. I was thinking of getting an older F-250, my second favorite vehicle, the first being a Jeep 392.
That tows 5,000. Yeah, here's another one where, is it a manual or is it an automatic? That would be really helpful to know.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Once again, assuming the problem is up the hill. Perfect. So Mary's assuming she may not have problem towing up the hill, but she is not asking about downhill.
How big is the trailer? How many pounds?
She says small RV. She didn't say how much. So we need a little bit more information. But
Mary, sorry.
You know, most Tacomas don't have brake controllers.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So you have to look at that. Maybe an older F-250 is your better choice. First of all, you have a bigger platform, heavier truck. It will take care of your trailer in a more confident way. Plus winds, right? Driving down a highway with a crosswind, if you have a small truck and a larger camper, the wind will want to kind of sway you around.
Well, I agree with you, Andre. It's always better to over-truck than to under-truck. Right? And then I also think people, and once again, not enough information there, Mary, sorry, but I'll give you my best crack at it. I also think people forget about the difference between a wet and a dry trailer. And what I mean by that is...
You taking the hose and wetting it down?
I mean, a wet trailer, if it has water and you fill it up with, you know, 50 gallons of water... That's a lot of weight. And then, you know, stuff that you have that like your toaster and your toast and your clothes and your shoes. And if you put some bikes in the back, you know, all of a sudden this, like, let's say it's a 5,000-pound trailer becomes a 6,000-pound trailer or more very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, I always think it's better to have more truck than less truck. Old Tacoma, once again, I don't know. Is it the 4-cylinder? Then run.
No, don't do it. If it's a V6, it's okay.
It's okay, but if you've got that little 4-cylinder, that thing barely will go up the hill.
By itself,
unless you have a manual, in which case you can shift it to like third gear and maybe make it up.
Yeah, so pretty crazy. So we have 60 more questions, Roman. Are you ready?
Well, let's do one more. This is fun. Thank you guys for sending in all your questions. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you guys out there watching and listening to this are learning something, because every time I listen to one of these podcasts where people ask questions, I'm always frustrated because people don't answer the questions that I have. So I think we're trying to hopefully pick broader questions that may answer the kind of things that you guys are thinking about.
Here's a one. Will the Frontier get a mid-cycle refresh in 2024? I think unlikely, because it just came out in 2022, but they might add another package or a trim, potentially, so stay tuned for that. We may have some news in the future. Andre, how was your Maverick R experience?
Can I say something here? Mid-cycle refreshes basically are a way for the manufacturer to inject more money and life and excitement into the truck. So I kind of feel, if I read between the lines, like you want to get a Frontier, but you don't want the current one, you want the one that's been refreshed. But usually with a mid-cycle refresh, you're not getting any more capability. It's the same powertrain. It's basically the identical truck with like a new fascia on the front of it and a new rear end.
Maybe a new screen.
Maybe a feature or sticker package. But look, I'm a firm believer. I had a friend who taught me this lesson a long time ago. I had I bought an iPad, right? An iPod. Remember when they had the iPods? And then he got a newer one, and I was jealous. I was like, wow, you got the newer one. And he looked at me and goes, yes, but you've had 2 years to use yours.
And I was waiting,
and I didn't. So think of it that way, right?
Yeah.
You can wait for the next best thing, or you can have the thing you want now and use it. Especially with the mid-cycle refresh, you're not going to be missing out on a lot. And I'm sure the manufacturers don't like hearing that, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Somebody wants to know about my Can-Am Maverick R experience.
That is far from trucks.
It's very far from trucks, and it's also the video is coming.
Okay.
So please stay tuned to alltfl.com, our off-road video about that side-by-side, which is crazy high performance, is coming.
All right, we have four more minutes, and then I'm going to tell you something interesting.
What can we expect from Ram on the next-generation heavy-duty trucks to be more competitive against Ford and Chevy? Here's my looking glass.
Okay.
Because they haven't announced
anything. Peer into it.
They haven't announced anything.
No.
New cab from the light duty. You know how often cabs move up.
Yep.
So I think new cab is coming. I think the Cummins is here to stay. They've had a relationship for decades. So maybe a tweak on the diesels. And the interior is already great. So slightly longer bed, new cab. Same, similar powertrains.
Good prediction. I can't disagree.
Do you know when the media drive is for the new 2024 Ford Ranger? I do, but it wasn't announced.
So we can't tell you.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So sometimes we get embargoed information.
Before the end of the year.
For whatever reason.
I don't know. I'm guessing. So.
I do know.
I'm guessing. I'm saying before the end of the year.
You are correct.
Okay, yeah, I figured that. So that's, I'm trying to help you guys out. I don't know when it is, but okay. Andre knows. Let's wrap this up with a couple of things.
Uh-huh.
Andre, you just did a really cool towing video with the OBS truck. You ran the Denver 100. When is that publishing?
Yeah, so, well, actually, a couple of Denver 100s. So
okay.
Denver 100 is our big 110-mile loop around Denver on a flat highway because we do a lot of mountain towing, but we also want to do efficiency towing on measuring efficiency on a level highway.
So it's an efficiency towing test.
Yes. So the OBS Ford is coming a week from now.
Okay.
And I have a gas version of the Chevy Silverado heavy duty that's coming right now.
The one you just liked.
Yes.
So this weekend, if you're watching this.
So whenever this episode publishes on alltfl.com, we will have a gas version. Because you save, Roman, $9,500 by not buying the diesel.
Mm.
That's a good chunk of change. For $9,500, you could buy a lot of fuel, gasoline or whatever. So that's happening right now.
So let me bring this podcast full circle by thanking our Patreons as well. And if you want to help support this team,
patreon.com/TFLCar.
But as you recall, we started with Toyota. Now, over at TFL Car, we just finished a series where we bought three cheap Jeeps and then we kind of took them to Moab and played with them to see.
That was fun.
See which one it was. And it was very popular. A lot of people watched it. Thank you guys. It was a lot of fun, except when it was 104 out. That was a little bit hot, but otherwise it was a good series. But I will let the cat out of the bag, Andre.
What?
We are doing another version of that, as you know.
Yes.
Yes, except we're going to try to answer the question, is Toyota the most reliable of all brands? Because we are going to do the same cheap series, but cheap Toyotas. So we have bought three Toyotas, all with at least 200,000 miles for under $10,000. And I will let you guys in on this because we're right now in production of the series. It's going to air before the end of the year, but we still have to finish shooting it. Then we have to, of course, edit it. But one of those vehicles is yours. What did you buy, Andre? You can let them know. What did you buy?
It's a Toyota Tundra.
That's right.
But it's not any Toyota Tundra. It's a 5.7-liter V8.
Yes, found Toyota one Tundra. Under 10,000 with over 200,000 miles.
Yes.
And I think this series is going to live on truck. So that's the other hint. Well, guys, thank you for spending this hour with us. And thank you for your questions.
Yeah, a lot of awesome questions. Thank you very much.
And don't forget that basically our Car Talk channel. I don't want to use Car Talk because that, of course, is another podcast.
TFL Cars.
Yeah, TFL Car Talk. Nathan and I talk about all things cars. So that's also a podcast that you may want to check out. And then we're doing kind of a bonus podcast over on that channel. And you can, of course, see it at TFL Talk, our YouTube channel.
Ooh, where I also have a bonus.
Let me finish, and then I'll get yours. And we can finish out with yours. Where Paul Gerard, our race car driver who used to be the Stig on Top Gear USA, is doing special episodes with special guests in the car world. And the first guest is a tuner you may know who does BMWs. I'm going to leave it at that. And that's coming out next week.
Wait, I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I want to listen to that.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. He's got a lot of like interesting friends.
Awesome. That's really incredible.
And what's your? Well,
I interviewed most of the team with the Can-Am Maverick R.
Oh, nice.
I have over an hour.
Is that the truck? No.
Well, where do we put that podcast? I mean, I have over an hour of really interesting conversation with Can-Am people.
Do it as a bonus here.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe next week.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks for watching, guys. See you next time. Ciao.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money.